it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, it is that time, a Fransky Friday. And while we're always excited to talk to Scott, it is bittersweet that this is the final Fransky Friday of the season as the Phils lose in four last night to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Scott on his way home last night after one of the toughest ones I can ever remember. Scott, how are you feeling today?
Well, we're doing okay. Just about to take off back to Philly. We didn't. The team's traveling this morning, so stayed the night in L.A. and everybody's loading up the two planes they've got and about to start the journey.
Yeah, and it's going to be a journey this offseason to try to pick up the pieces where we leave off. Scott Fransky with us. Hunter Brody in for Hugh Douglas today. Scott, what were you? I mean, we all heard your call. We played it. I was listening to you. What were you thinking as the ball went back to Kirkring, and how did it kind of play out in your eyes? Because it's just, I was shocked. I never thought he was coming home with the baseball until obviously it was too late.
Yeah, that's the only way to look at it. I mean, I think everybody was surprised. I didn't see that coming. But again, you know, for me, just in that spot, you're just trying to react to what you see and try to at least keep it together enough to describe what's happening. It was a tough way to have it end. I mean, it was two really, really good teams going at it in a series. I said goodbye to the Dodger broadcasters when I walked out last night. They were still on the air, actually, and I just kind of poked my head in real quick. And, you know, the one thing they said to me is, you know, a series that good shouldn't have ended on a play like that. And you feel for Orion. You really do. Just, you know, you feel a lot of heartbreak for the guy. It's a play he's had to make over and over and over again in PFPs and in real games. But he didn't make the right play. He didn't make the play. I mean, honestly, you know, revisionist history. If his throw gets to JT, they get him out because Kim didn't step on the plate.
Yeah.
I heard Orion's comment afterwards. He said, I just thought after bumbling it, you know, after it hit off his foot, he felt like the quickest play was to home. There was panic in that moment, clearly, and threw it away.
Yeah, it was a shame, and it was hard to watch because you know how much, you know, pain he was probably feeling in the moment. But let me ask you this in regards to him being in the game. Now, he did actually have an opportunity to get out of it, but just because of the nature of the talk with the inherited runners and all, do you like the idea of going to Kirkering there instead of maybe staying with Lizardo instead?
Well, again, I mean, I know people want to talk about the things they've asked people to do that they've never done before, and you know, I heard you guys talking a little bit ago, you know, you didn't want to see David Robertson come back out because they'd never asked him to do it. Well, they never asked Jesus Luzardo to pitch on his bullpen day either. I think they felt like it got to the end of the line. I mean, he made the pitch he needed to make. He did. He made the pitch he needed to make. He didn't make the play he needed to make. And it's crazy because, you know, it was a broken bat roller just to the left of the mound that beat him the other night off of Kirkery. The one that Kike had that scored what turned out to be the go-ahead run. It's crazy that a series like that with two offenses that powerful comes down to two broken bat comebackers to the mound.
It really is. Scott Fransky joining us from L.A. as the Phillies head back after the NLDS. Scott, what was your thought on the intentional walk to Ohtani in the seventh inning? It was interesting because I understand why you do it, right? It's Shohei Ohtani. A base is open there. He's the best player in baseball. But he wasn't hitting well in this series. And by doing that, there's no margin for error for Duran. And it's Betts coming up. It's not like there's, you know, some huge drop-off behind Ohtani. It's another great player. What did you think of that move? It's a 50-50. It didn't go the Phillies' way because the walk was next. What did you think when the Phillies decided to walk Ohtani to get to Betts?
I didn't have a problem with it, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, what did Duran walk? One guy in his time with Phillies. He's never issued a bases-loaded walk. Ohtani had numbers off him I guarantee you, I know people are frustrated and they're looking for ways to put blame on some kind of a move. But I guarantee you, if he lets him face Ohtani and Ohtani takes a deep, which he's done twice, and it's 3-0, what are you going to say that? Why didn't you put him on and face the righty-righty, right? I mean, that's what you would say. I have no doubt about it. So I didn't have a big problem with it. I said on the broadcast last night, the fact that Ohtani was one for whatever, it was like a ticking time bomb. It was going to go off at some point. And I don't think in that moment you can let the best player on the planet beat you. They gave up one run, but that's all. And I think if Ohtani, again, if Ohtani goes deep right there, the talk will be different today. People want something to, they want to blame somebody. They're hurt. They're heartbroken. They're upset. I get it. But I didn't have a problem with it.
I agree with you. I would have walked Ohtani as well. But we're 3 questions in, and 2 have been about Rob Thompson's decision-making. So it brings me here. Because something needs to change, not saying it's all Rob, obviously, but, it's an easy lever to pull, let's say. What do you think the future holds for Rob Thompson and the Phillies?
I don't know. I heard the Phillies owner, John Middleton, on these airwaves last week saying that it's the best managerial job Rob Thompson has done since he's been here. I don't know how you go from saying that one week to saying goodbye the next. He won 96 games. He's won more games every single year. And then if you want to make, they may make that decision. I don't know. But I think it's
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is dangerous to be so short-sighted to make a call that important based on the vagaries of a 4-game, 5-game, 7-game playoff series. I get it. People think things need to change. We were standing around waiting on buses this morning, and everybody's talking, all the not only the players, but the front office staff and people connected to the organization are there. And I watched Charlie Manuel walk to the bus. And Charlie Manuel, he was always the first to tell you, this game is about the players. And the players make the plays. And the players either win or they lose. Managers are there to try to keep the ship steady. I think Rob did that in the face of a lot of things that were going on in that clubhouse this year. Tried to keep players healthy for the long run. I don't see how you dole out the praise you were doling out a week ago when they were division champs and 96-game winners, so saying, well, that's the move you got to make. There will be changes, clearly. There's free agency for a lot of guys. They haven't performed in the playoffs. They've lost, 8 of the last 10 playoff games they've played, going back to the 23 NLCS. So there's something that needs to be better. But I don't know what the future holds, but I do know that they had a pretty high regard for him last week, and we'll see over the next few days, I guess.
Scott, not just Topper, but how do you parse when you think about the decision they have to make? How much should we weigh into the postseason? It is such a uniquely small sample size that matters so much to all of us. It's 4 games, and 3 of them were super close and coin flip games versus the regular season, because I think it's difficult for me. I'm sure the front offices try to think about things black and white and very analytically, but it's hard because these guys were great during the regular season. Topper was great. Schwarber was amazing. And I'm not saying Schwarber was bad in the series, but just in general, like short-term, long-term, because they have big decisions to make here, Scott, and it's those two things have to be conflicting in their minds. Like, hey, we're great in the regular season, but we seemingly can't get over the hump in the postseason.
I don't know how you necessarily rectify it. I mean, either I think as leaders of the organization, and by that I mean, you know, whether it's John Middleton or the rest of the ownership group or Dave Dombrowski and his team, they have to decide whether or not they feel like that the manager and coaching staff put the players in the best position to be successful. And if they feel like that happened and the players weren't successful, then I think you look first to the players. The players play this game. You know, we can, I know there's been, you know, everybody's analysis on the bunt call. I can draw out for you 100 different, very reasonable, very plausible ways that situation plays out if they don't bump. And they don't end up necessarily with the Phillies winning, right? I mean, they held the Dodgers to 3 runs in the last 2 games, right? The pitching staff held the Dodgers to 1 earned run in 11 innings last week. They didn't win. It's because they didn't win because they didn't hit enough. They didn't hit enough. This team was built. When I say built, I'm talking about the money that was invested in, let's say, the top 5 highest paid players, right? Turner, Schwarber, Harper, GT, and Nick Castellanos. Those are your 5 big guns. And they didn't get enough. JT had an amazing series at the plate. Kyle Schwarber had a big night in that game. But Harper hit 200. Kyle hit 188. He had high OPS because 2 of the hits were homers. Nick hit under 200. He drove in 3 runs. Harper drove in 9. I mean, that's where this lies, if you ask me. That's where this lies, is that they didn't hit enough. Is that because their skills are declining or they're not the right players or because they just had a bad week? I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I do know that over the long haul, they won 96 games. That makes them a really, really good team. And it gives them plenty to work for or work with as they go forward to next year. But I know people are frustrated and they're heartbroken and they're sad. And I am right there with them. This is my life. And, you know, it's like a death in the family. When this day comes, and it comes every year. And only one time in my life has it come when the Phillies win in the World Series. So, yeah, it's tough. It's a tough day.
Yeah, no, I guess I'll try to be the guy here to bring in some positivity. Well, let me ask you this question, all right? Christopher Sanchez. All right, now listen, I was watching him like a proud father yesterday on my couch, remembering when he was up and down, you know, he was right. A Bailey Falter type role. What was it like for you to see him on that stage after everything he's been through to get to that point? Wheeler goes down. This guy was a star who was making Freddie Freeman look lost at the plate in this series. How about this for a positive question? Just what have you seen with him and the growth of him? Because he's going to be a part of this.
You know, Bros, it's the exact thing I was thinking about. During the 2 innings that Tom was on the air, I had a chance. I was going back, and we dug up the numbers. He was recalled and optioned 14 times. 14 times. He was called up and sent back, and called up and sent back. Sometime on the same day. Until that day in June of 23, when they put him in the starting rotation. You remember back then it was a question, would it be Falter, would it be Sanchez? Would it be Falter, would it be Sanchez? Who was going to be the fifth starter? And to see the growth, to see the maturation, to see him just being a total stud in the postseason. A lot of people had a lot of hands in it to help get him there, make him stronger, make him a better pitcher. But most of the credit has got to go to Christopher. He's such a good human being. He's a humble guy. He's a hard worker. And I mean, as a person who's in this organization, I was really proud of the way he took over that job, as you said, from Zach Wheeler as the number one guy. And he pitched every bit like a Cy Young type ace in this series, for sure.
He did. It's an incredible development story, and he's awesome. And he earned the Cy Young votes he's going to receive here and be awarded in about a month from now. Scott, we appreciate you hopping on. Appreciate all the spot the entire season. And I'll speak for everyone listening, the fan base. We love listening to Scott. Do an incredible job. Thank you for the season, and I'm sure we'll talk soon. And enjoy the offseason that starts a little too early here. Thank you, Scott.
All right, thanks, guys. We'll talk to you again soon.
There you go. Scott Fransky, the voice of the Phillies.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.